The tales Hannah had read to the English patient, travelling with the old wanderer in Kim or with Fabrizio in the Charterhouse of Parma, had intoxicated them in a swirl of armies and horses and wagons, those running away from or running towards a war. When she begins a book, she enters through stilted doorways into large courtyards. Parma and Paris and India spread their carpets. Read Kipling slowly, dear girl. You must read him slowly. Watch carefully where the commas fall so you can discover the natural pauses. Think about the speed of his pen. That was the English patient's first lesson about reading. He did not interrupt again. If he happened to fall asleep, she would continue, never looking up until she herself was fatigued. If he had missed the last half hour of plot, just one room would be dark in a story he probably already knew. The tribe that had saved the burned pilot brought him into the British base at Siwa in 1944. He was moved in the midnight ambulance train from the western desert to Tunis, then shipped to Italy. At that time of the war, there were hundreds of soldiers lost from themselves, more innocent than devious. Those who claimed to be uncertain of their nationalities were housed in compounds in Tyrrhenia, where the sea hospital was. The burned pilot was one more enigma, with no identification, unrecognizable. "You should be trying to trick me," the burned pilot told his interrogators. "Make me speak German, which I can, by the way. Ask me about Marmite, the great Gertrude Jekyll." The sea hospital was created out of bathing cabins along the beach that tourists had rented at the turn of the century. The burned man noticed the young nurse, separate from the others. He was familiar with such dead glances, knew she was more patient than nurse. He was interrogated again. Everything about him was very English except for the fact that his skin was tarred black, a bog man from history among the interrogating officers. They asked him where the Allies stood in Italy, and he said he assumed they had taken Florence but were held up by the hill towns north of them. He rambled on, driving them mad, traitor or ally, leaving them never quite sure who he was. Now, months later, in the Villa San Girolamo, in the arbor room that is his bedroom, he reposes like the sculpture of the dead knight in Ravenna. He speaks in fragments about oasis towns, the later Medicis, the prose style of Kipling, and in his commonplace book, his 1890 edition of Herodotus' Histories, are other fragments, maps, diary entries, writings in many languages, paragraphs cut out of other books. All that is missing is his own name. There is still no clue to who he actually is, nameless without rank or battalion or squadron. Hannah was carrying a long mirror in front of her down the hall. She would pause because of the weight of it and then move forward, the mirror reflecting the old dark pink of the passageway. The Englishman had wanted to see himself. Before she stepped into the room, she carefully turned the reflection upon herself, not wanting the light to bounce indirectly from the window into his face. She stood on a chair at the foot of the bed and slowly tilted the mirror down at him. She was in this position, her hands braced out in front of her, when she heard the faint shouts. "Keep the mirror still, my dear," the English patient said. "I think there is someone shouting. Do you hear it?" "It's the boy. You'd better go and find out." She leaned the mirror against the wall and rushed down the corridor. She paused outside, waiting for the next yell. When it came, she took off through the garden and into the fields above the house.